His curiosità was as acute in observing his fellow humans as it was in his study of horses, birds, water, and light. As he wrote, "Oh, that it may please God to let me also expound the psychology of the habits of man in such fashion as I am describing his body." Leonardo's deep interest in people from all walks of life is the source of the profound depth of character he illuminated in the subjects of his drawings and paintings. He counseled, "When you are out for a walk, see to it that you watch and consider other men's postures and actions as they talk, argue, laugh, or scuffle, their own actions, and those of their supporters and onlookers, and make a note of these with a few strokes in your little notebook, which you must always carry with you." Leonardo's acute observations led him to practical understanding of the art of getting along with others, and he complemented his interpersonal intelligence with a lifelong commitment to developing his interpersonal intelligence, self-knowledge. In addition to profound contemplation and reflection, Leonardo cultivated self-knowledge by seeking feedback, advising his readers to be desirous of hearing patiently the opinion of others, and consider and reflect carefully whether he who censures you has reason for his censure. You can strengthen curiosità and deepen self-knowledge by asking your spouse, children, friends, clients, co-workers, boss, and employees for regular feedback. In words that are natural to you, ask questions such as, "What are my weaknesses, blind spots, and areas for improvement? What are my strengths, my best qualities? What can I do to be more effective, helpful, or sensitive?" When you ask for feedback, be sure to listen carefully to the responses you receive, especially if they are not what you wanted or expected to hear. Don't explain, justify, or argue. It's best not to comment at all. Just listen. Record the feedback in your notebook for contemplation. Curiosità for parents. How can you keep the natural Da Vincian curiosity of your children alive? Begin by thinking of yourself as a student. Let your child serve as a role model in reawakening your own openness and questing frame of mind. As you empathize with the purity and enthusiasm of your child's approach to learning, you will be better able to nurture it. Of course, children's persistent question asking can test your patience, but if you keep your heart open, you will find the necessary stamina. In addition to being a continuous learner yourself, you can also be a curiosità coach for your kids. Guide them to use the what, when, who, how, and where and why approach to creative problem solving, choose a genius of the month, and discuss the types of questions that great minds have asked through the ages. I recommend Leonardo for your first month. Take your children to the traveling exhibition called Leonardo and the Age of Invention. It offers kids the opportunity to experience for themselves some of the maestro's amazing discoveries. Encourage your children to ask questions and to continue asking. When your kids come home from school, ask them, "What did you ask at school today?" Dimostrazione, a commitment to test knowledge through experience, persistence, and a willingness to learn from mistakes. Think of the best teachers you have ever had. What makes a teacher great? More than anything else, it is the ability to help the student learn for himself. The finest teachers know that experience is the source of wisdom, and the principle of dimostrazione is the key to making the most of your experience. Leonardo made the most of his experiences in the studio of the master painter and sculptor Andrea del Verrocchio, whom Da Vinci biographer Serge Bramley refers to as a one-man university of the arts. The training the young Leonardo received as an apprentice in Verrocchio's studio emphasized experience more than theory. He learned to prepare canvases and paints and was introduced to the optics of perspective. The technical secrets of sculpture, bronze casting, and goldsmithing were part of the curriculum, and he was encouraged to study, through direct observation, the structure of plants and the anatomy of animals and humans. Thus, he grew up with a profoundly practical orientation. Leonardo's practical orientation, penetrating intelligence, curiosity, and independent spirit, led him to question much of the accepted theory and dogma of his time. In the course of his geologic investigations, for example, he discovered fossils and seashells on mountain peaks in Lombardy. In the Codex Lester, he advances decisive arguments against the prevailing view that these were deposits of the biblical flood, based not on theology, but on his logical thinking and real-world experience. Disputing each assumption on which conventional wisdom was based, he finally concludes that such an opinion cannot exist in brains of any extensive powers of reasoning. In his studies of geology, Leonardo walked the hills of Lombardy and held fossils in his hands. When he wanted to learn anatomy, he dissected more than 30 human bodies and countless animal corpses. Like his research on fossilization, his anatomic work was a direct challenge to the accepted authorities of the time. As he wrote, "Many will think that they can with reason blame me, alleging that my proofs are contrary to the authority of certain men held in great reverence by their inexperienced judgments, not considering that my works are the issue of simple and plain experience, which is the true mistress." Throughout his life, he proudly referred to himself as uomo senza lettere, man without letters, and discepolo della esperienza, disciple of experience. He wrote, "To me it seems that those sciences are vain and full of error which are not born of experience, mother of all certainty, first-hand experience which in its origins or means or end has passed through one of the five senses." Leonardo championed originality and independence of thought. He urged, "No one should imitate the manner of another, for he would then deserve to be called a grandson of nature, not her son. Given the abundance of natural forms, it is important to go straight to nature." His willingness to reject imitation, question authority, and think for himself would be remarkable in any age, but it becomes truly amazing when one considers that he was heir to an era that assumed, as William Manchester emphasizes, that all knowledge was already known. In addition to being one of the least pious thinkers of his time, Leonardo was also one of the least superstitious. He saw the popular attention to alchemy and astrology as the enemy of experience and independent thought, and desired the day when all astrologers will be castrated. Although critical of the scholastic and academic traditions, Leonardo did not throw out the baby with the bathwater. For example, he taught himself Latin in 1494 at the age of 42 to gain a deeper knowledge of the classics. And Leonardo maintained his own library. His collection included the Bible, Aesop, Diogenes, Ovid, Pliny the Elder, Dante, Petrarch, Ficino, and texts on agriculture, anatomy, mathematics, medicine, and warfare. Da Vinci scholar Professor Edward McCurdy emphasizes that he was in the habit of studying all classical and medieval authorities obtainable on the subjects in which he was interested. Leonardo consorted with other great minds, including Bramante, Machiavelli, Luca Pacioli, and Marcantonio della Torre. He viewed the work of others as experience by proxy, to be studied carefully and critically, and ultimately to be tested through his own experience. Leonardo saw how preconceptions and bookish prejudices limited scientific inquiry. He knew that learning from experience also meant learning from mistakes. He wrote, "Experience never errs. It is only your judgment that errs in promising itself results as are not caused by your experiments." Although generally recognized as the greatest genius of all time, Leonardo made many colossal mistakes and staggering blunders. Among his most notable faux pas were tragically unsuccessful experiments in fixing paint for the Battle of Anghiari and the Last Supper. Disastrous and hugely wasteful attempts, sponsored by the Signoria of Florence to divert the Arno River, and a flying machine that never got off the ground. There was also a particularly hilarious failed scheme to automate Ludovico Sforza's kitchen. Asked to preside as head chef for a major banquet, Leonardo created a grand plan for sculpting each course to be served to the more than 200 guests. The dishes were designed as miniature works of art. Leonardo built a new, more powerful stove and a complex system of mechanical conveyor belts to move plates around the kitchen. He also designed and installed a massive sprinkler system in case of fire. On the day of the banquet, everything that could go wrong did. Ludovico's regular kitchen staff weren't capable of the fine carving that Leonardo required, so the maestro invited more than 100 of his artist friends to help out. In the vastly overcrowded kitchen, the conveyor system failed, and then fire broke out. The sprinkler system worked all too well, causing a flood that washed away all the food and a good part of the kitchen. Despite mistakes, disasters, failures, and disappointments, Leonardo never stopped learning, exploring, and experimenting. He demonstrated Herculean persistence in his quest for knowledge. Next to a drawing of a plow in his notebook, Leonardo proclaimed, "I do not depart from my furrow." Elsewhere, he noted, "Obstacles do not bend me, and every obstacle is destroyed through rigor." Martin Kemp, author of Leonardo da Vinci, The Marvelous Works of Nature and Man, comments, "There is no doubt which principle Leonardo considered as defining the true direction for the furrow he wished to plow. That principle was what he termed experience." Dimostrazione and you. The real significance of the Renaissance was the transformation of fundamental assumptions, preconceptions, and beliefs. Leonardo's willingness to challenge the dominant worldview through application of the principle of dimostrazione placed him in the vanguard of this revolution. He realized that one challenges the worldview by first challenging one's own view, cautioning that the greatest deception men suffer is from their own opinions. Learning to think like Leonardo requires the eye-opening work of questioning our own opinions, assumptions, and beliefs. Are you ever deceived by your own opinions? Are your opinions and beliefs truly your own? The exercises that follow are designed to help you think with more freedom and originality, but first, take some time to consider the role that dimostrazione plays in your life today and how you might strengthen it further. Evaluate your own independence. Are you an independent thinker? When was the last time you changed a deeply held belief? What did it feel like? Think of your friends and colleagues. What sources do they rely on to determine their beliefs and opinions? Who is the most independent, original thinker you know? What makes that person an original? Think for a moment of the way you have learned what you know. Do you learn more from your successes or failures? From good times or bad? We all know that good judgment comes from experience, but we also know that we often gain experience through bad judgment. Do you make the most of your mistakes? Contemplate the self-assessment checklist. These are challenging questions, but your honest reflection will help you focus on getting the most from the exercises that follow. Dimostrazione, self-assessment. I am willing to acknowledge my mistakes. My closest friends would agree that I am willing to acknowledge my mistakes. I learn from my mistakes and rarely make the same one twice. I question conventional wisdom and authority. When a celebrity I admire endorses a product, I am more likely to buy it. I can articulate my most fundamental beliefs and the reasons I hold them. I have changed a deeply held belief because of practical experience. I persevere in the face of obstacles. I view adversity as an opportunity for growth. I am sometimes susceptible to superstition. In considering new ideas, my friends and associates would say that I am A, gullible and new agey, B, a closed-minded cynic, or C, an open-minded skeptic. Dimostrazione, application, and exercises. Examine experience. An hour spent with these questions can yield a lifetime's reflection on how experience has determined your attitudes and behaviors. Working with your notebook, explore the following questions. What are the most influential experiences of your life? Take about 20 to 30 minutes and list at least 7. Along with a one-sentence summary of what you learned from each experience. Now spend a few minutes reflecting on how you apply what you have learned from these most influential experiences on an everyday basis. Next, look at your list of significant experiences and ask, what is the single most influential experience of my life? For some people, this is an easy question to answer. For others, there isn't one experience that jumps out. If nothing jumps out for you, choose any experience from your list. Then spend a few minutes asking yourself, how has this experience colored my attitudes and perceptions? Aim to note down, in a sentence or two, the effects of the experience on your view of the world. Finally, ask yourself, can I rethink some of the conclusions drawn at the time? Avoid answering this last question too quickly. Just hold it in your mind and heart for a while and let it marinate. Check your beliefs and sources. Many of us are unaware of the sources we use to obtain and verify information. We know that we have opinions, assumptions, and beliefs about a wide variety of topics, human nature, ethics, politics, ethnic groups, scientific truth, sexuality, religion, medicine, the meaning of life, art, marriage, parenting, history, other cultures, etc. But do you know how you found those beliefs, or where you got the information on which they're based? Start by choosing any three of the above areas. For example, you might choose human nature, politics, and art. Then, in your notebook, write down at least three ideas, opinions, assumptions, or beliefs that you hold in the areas you have chosen to consider. For example, human nature. I believe that people are basically good. I believe that behavior is predominantly determined by genetics. It's human nature to resist change. After you have listed at least three beliefs about each of your chosen areas, ask yourself, how did I form this idea? How firmly do I believe it? Why do I maintain it? What would make me change my belief? Which of my beliefs inspire the strongest emotions? Then look at each of your beliefs in the three areas you have chosen to examine and consider the role of the following sources in its formation. Media. Books, the Internet, television, radio, newspapers, and magazines. People. Family, teachers, physicians, religious leaders, bosses, friends, and associates. Your own experience. What criteria do you use for assessing the validity of information you receive? Do most of your ideas come from books? Or are you primarily influenced by family? How much of what you read in the newspaper or see on television do you believe? Aim to determine, through reflection and contemplation, the dominant source of your information and the underpinnings of your beliefs and opinions. See if you hold any beliefs for which you have no experiential verification. Is there a way you could test your convictions and experience? 3 points of view. In your notebook, write out a statement of the belief that, in the previous exercise, generated the strongest emotion. In the Curiosità chapter, we learned that when Leonardo was questing for objective knowledge, dissecting a corpse, or assessing one of his paintings, he viewed his subject from at least 3 different perspectives. Do the same with your beliefs and opinions. Just as the maestro used a mirror to see his paintings in reverse, try making the strongest possible argument against your belief. Leonardo also sought perspective by reviewing his paintings from a distance. Try reviewing your belief from a distance by asking yourself, would my views on this change if I lived in a different country, came from another religious, racial, economic, or class background, was 20 years older, younger, or was a member of the opposite gender? Finally, seek out friends or acquaintances who you suspect might offer perspectives different from your own. Interview your friends, aiming to see the issue from another point of view. Practice internal, anti-commercial, martial arts. As you read this book, thousands of exceptionally creative, highly focused advertising executives are marshaling budgets in the billions to influence your values, self-image, and buying habits. Preying on sexual insecurities, or Walter Mitty fantasies, or just bludgeoning with pure repetition, advertisers are very good at reaching their demographic targets. Maintaining independence of thought in the face of this onslaught requires a discipline similar to that developed through martial arts training. Try the following self-defense exercises. Go through your favorite magazine and analyze the strategy and tactics of each advertisement. Do the same analysis with the commercials from your favorite television and radio programs. Note which advertisements affect you most strongly and why. How did advertising affect you when you were a child? Make a list of the three best advertisements you have ever seen. What made them so good? Identify 10 purchases you have made over the last few months and ask yourself if you were influenced in any way by advertising. Try a stream of consciousness writing session on the topic, The Role of Advertising in the Formation of My Values and Self-Image. One of the most clever and cynical tactics of advertisers is expressed in the attempt to co-opt the image of independent thinking and individualism. Witness attempts to identify with the rebel and the individualist through such revolutionary gestures as driving an off-road vehicle, smoking a $15 cigar, or wearing a particular brand of jeans or sneakers, or a baseball cap turned backward. Record examples of this phenomenon in your notebook. Some that you may have noticed include the Marlboro Man and the Virginia Slims Lady, the chain of steakhouses whose motto is No Rules, Just Right, or the hamburger franchise that reminds us, sometimes you've got to break the rules. Try testing these by violating the implicit rule, pay for your steak or burger. Even the beloved Dilbert, symbol of rebellion to inane bureaucracy, has become co-opted. He is now a mass-market phenomenon used to sell more advertising and generate more cubicles. Learn from mistakes and adversity. Explore your attitude toward mistakes by contemplating the following questions and recording your reflections in your notebook. What did you learn at school about making mistakes? What did your parents teach you about making mistakes? What is the biggest mistake you ever made? What did you learn from it? What mistakes do you repeat? What role does the fear of making mistakes play in your daily life, at work, and at home? Are you more likely to make mistakes of commission or omission? Try a stream of consciousness writing session on the topic, What I Would Do Differently If I Had No Fear of Making Mistakes. Leonardo made many mistakes and experienced tremendous adversity in his quest for truth and beauty. In addition to false accusations, invasions, exile, and the wanton destruction of one of his greatest works, the maestro's most significant adversity was probably the sheer loneliness of being so far ahead of his time. Although he experienced self-doubt and questioned the value of his efforts, he never gave up. Leonardo's courage and persistence in the face of adversity are tremendously inspiring. He strengthened his will to continue his work through affirmations that he wrote in his notebook, such as, I do not depart from my furrow. Obstacles do not bend me. Every obstacle is destroyed through rigor. I shall continue. I never tire of being useful. Create affirmations. Long-term studies by Dr. Martin Seligman and many others show that the critical determinant of success in business and life is resilience in the face of adversity. Awareness, deep contemplation, and a sense of humor are your best friends in attempting to learn from difficult experiences. You can also, like Leonardo, strengthen your resilience by creating your own affirmations. In your notebook, write out at least one affirmation to inspire you in dealing with each of your greatest challenges. Many people use affirmations beginning with the phrase, I am, such as, I am patient with myself, or, I am becoming more patient with myself. Although I am affirmations can be helpful, they tend to elicit a primarily intellectual, cognitive response. You can get your affirmations to work at a deeper level by framing them in a more emotional, heart-centered way. The following experiment shows how. Repeat the following affirmation. I am patient with myself. Notice your response. Now try it this way. I feel patient with myself. Again, notice your response. When you tell yourself how you feel, not just how you are more likely to feel what you say, allowing your affirmations to take hold on a deeper level. The following affirmations, written in collaboration with my friend Dr. Dale Schusterman, are designed to help you access your heart's center so that deeper changes can emerge. Relationships. I feel willing to allow another person into my heart. I feel curious what I might change in myself that would help my partner. I feel the difference between my father and my husband, mother, wife. I honor the feminine nature in my wife, girlfriend. Spirituality. My connection to the divine, Christ, higher self, Buddha, etc., is my top priority. Say this while visualizing work, relationships, money, expectations, parents, stressful events from the past, etc. I feel the presence of the divine within me. In my heart, I feel a divine will working in my life. I acknowledge the lessons my soul needs to learn from, say, the name of a person or an experience. Money. I feel the difference between my desires and my needs. I feel curious how to allow abundance to enter my life. I feel willing for abundance to enter my life. I feel worthy of abundance in my life. I acknowledge that abundance already exists in my life. Learning. The brilliance of my mind manifests in ways that surprise me. I acknowledge my ability to learn intuitively. I feel curious how to solve this problem, learn this subject. I trust the knowledge to be here when I need it. Career. I feel worthy in my contribution to the world. I feel connected to my inner strength when others view my work. I feel curious how to manifest my inner purpose in the world. I feel willing to manifest my inner purpose in the world. Joy of life. I feel joy within myself in all situations. Say this as you visualize a stressful situation. I feel deserving of happiness. I feel joy in the happiness of others. My joy and happiness come from within me. Self-actualization. I trust my inner self. I feel the presence of the divine within me. I allow myself to feel my feelings. I acknowledge my feelings about myself. Learn from anti-role models. One of the most efficient ways to learn from mistakes is to let someone else make them for you. It is wonderful to have positive role models like Leonardo, whom you can strive to emulate, but you can also learn a tremendous amount by studying anti-role models. For example, I learned most of what I know about coaching and teaching from my worst coaches and teachers. I remember sitting in class while one teacher droned on endlessly, another never listened when someone asked a question. Then there was the coach who was fond of humiliating his players. They taught me what not to do. I am also grateful to other anti-role models who, by demonstrating exactly what not to do, have helped me avoid getting into debt and having a nervous breakdown. Make a list of at least 3 people who have made mistakes that you would like to avoid. How can you learn from their mistakes? The tricky thing about this exercise is that sometimes your greatest anti-role models also happen to be positive role models in some areas. Your task, of course, is to accurately discriminate between what you want to emulate and what you want to avoid. Dimostrazione at work. In the business world, senior executives overwhelmingly point to a failure to heed their own experience as the prime cause of their worst decisions. Too often, business people allow their better judgment, based on experience, to be overruled by analysts, attorneys, and academic authorities. Mark McCormick, the founder of the International Management Group and author of What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School, describes the limiting mental set that can be created by academic training. A master's in business can sometimes block an ability to master experience. Many of the MBAs we hired were either congenitally naive or victims of their business training. The result was a kind of real-life learning disability, a failure to read people properly or to size up situations, and an uncanny knack for forming the wrong perceptions. The best leaders and managers know, as Leonardo did, that experience is the heart of wisdom. Dimostrazioni for parents. How do you raise a child who thinks for himself, learns from mistakes, and perseveres in the face of adversity? As with most aspects of parenting, the answers aren't easy, but one key is to nurture your child's confidence. The word confidence comes from the roots fidere, to trust, and con, with. Confidence, trust in oneself and one's abilities, is the secret of success, and the experience of success is a key to building confidence. Build your children's confidence by guiding them to success in learning. Break tasks down into simple components so kids get a series of small successes rather than a few big failures. Nothing builds a child's self-confidence like unconditional love. Let your children know that you love them for who they are rather than for what they do. Compliment unconditional love with enthusiastic encouragement. Shower your children with phrases like, "You can do anything you set your mind to," "I believe in you," and "I know you can do it." Treat mistakes as learning opportunities. When your children do fail, give them gentle, accurate feedback and enthusiastic encouragement. One of the problems with some self-esteem-oriented education is that it confuses unconditional love and encouragement with inaccurate feedback. Telling a child that his performance is good or right when it is not undercuts the development of genuine self-esteem. Accurate feedback grounds your child in reality and communicates your respect for his ability to learn. Sensazione, the continual refinement of the senses, especially sight, as the means to enliven experience. All our knowledge has its origin in our perceptions. Leonardo da Vinci. Sight, sound, touch, taste, and smell. If you think like Leonardo, you recognize these as the keys to opening the doors of experience. Da Vinci believed that the secrets of dimostrazione are revealed through the senses, especially sight. Saper vedere, knowing how to see, was one of Leonardo's mottos and the cornerstone of his artistic and scientific work. In The Creators, A History of Heroes of the Imagination, Daniel Boorstin entitles his chapter on Da Vinci, Sovereign of the Visible World. Da Vinci's sovereignty stemmed from the combination of his open questioning mind, his reliance on actual experience, and his uncanny visual acuity. Nurtured by a boyhood spent observing and enjoying the natural beauty of the Tuscan countryside, and further cultivated by his teacher Verrocchio, the true eye, Leonardo developed astonishing powers of sight bordering on those of a cartoon superhero. In his Codex on the Flight of Birds, for example, he recorded minutiae about the movements of feathers and wings in flight that remained unconfirmed and not fully appreciated until the development of slow-motion moving pictures. Da Vinci was most dramatic and rapturous in describing the power of vision. He who loses his sight loses his view of the universe, and is like one interred alive who can still move about and breathe in his grave. Do you not see that the eye encompasses the beauty of the whole world? It is the master of astronomy. It assists and directs all the arts of men. It sends men forth to all the corners of the earth. It reigns over the various departments of mathematics, and all its sciences are the most infallible. It has measured the distance and the size of the stars, has discovered the elements and the nature thereof, and from the courses of the constellations it has enabled us to predict things to come. It has created architecture and perspective, and lastly, the divine art of painting. O thou most excellent of all God's creations, what hymns can do justice to thy nobility?
What peoples, what tongues, sufficiently describe thine achievements? Da Vinci's gaze allowed him to capture exquisite and unprecedented subtleties of human expression in his paintings. For the maestro, the eye was truly the window of the soul, and, as he emphasized repeatedly, the chief means whereby the understanding may most fully and abundantly appreciate the infinite works of nature. For Leonardo, vision was supreme, and painting was therefore the greatest discipline. Hearing, and therefore music, came next in importance. He wrote, "Music may be called the sister of painting, for she is dependent upon hearing, the sense which comes second. Painting excels and ranks higher than music, because it does not fade away as soon as it is born." In Leonardo's day, there were, of course, no audio cassettes, phonograph records, or compact discs. Among his many extraordinary abilities, Leonardo was a brilliant musician. His popularity at the palaces of his patrons was partly attributable to his playing of the flute, lyre, and other instruments. Vasari tells us that he sang divinely without any preparation. When he was accepted by his new patron, Ludovico Sforza, in Milan, he brought a silver-handled lyre in the shape of a horse's head that he made himself as a gift. In addition to composing, playing, and singing, Leonardo sought musical accompaniment whenever he painted. For the maestro, music was sensory, spiritual nourishment. Though vision and hearing were at the head of Leonardo's sensory hierarchy, he valued, practiced, and encouraged the refinement of all the senses. He took great care to wear the best clothes he could afford, savoring the feel of fine velvets and silks. His studio was always filled with the scent of flowers and perfumes. He cultivated his senses further through his passion for the culinary arts. Leonardo created, in the West, the concept of small, healthy, exquisitely sculpted portions of food for banquets. Yet Leonardo reflected sadly that the average human looks without seeing, listens without hearing, touches without feeling, eats without tasting, moves without physical awareness, inhales without awareness of odor or fragrance, and talks without thinking. His assessment reads, centuries later, as an invitation to improve our senses and our minds and experiences along the way. The five senses are the ministers of the soul. Leonardo da Vinci. Sensazioni and you. What is the most beautiful thing you have ever seen? The sweetest sound you've ever heard? The most exquisitely tender touch? Imagine a sublimely delicious taste and a haunting, delectable aroma. How does your experience of one sense affect all the others? The questions and exercises in this chapter are sensational fun. You will be tasting chocolate and wine and discovering new ways to appreciate music and art. You will learn to enrich your experience of touch and to make your own cologne in the manner of the maestro. And you will be introduced to synesthesia, the synergy of the senses, a secret of great artists and scientists. Underlying all the fun and pleasure is the serious purpose of refining sensory intelligence. In addition to being the conduits of pleasure and pain, your senses are the midwives of intelligence. Sharp is a synonym for smart, and dull, another word for dumb. Both refer to sensory acuity. But in a world of traffic, cubicles, beepers, concrete, ringing telephones, artificial ingredients, jackhammers, and Beavis and Butthead, it becomes all too easy, as Leonardo said, to look without seeing. To do so violates the spirit of Leonardo, who made special efforts to nurture his sensory awareness and acuity. Da Vinci biographer Serge Bramley compares Leonardo's program of sensory development and refinement to an athlete's training regimen. He writes, "Just as an athlete develops his muscles, Leonardo trained his senses, educating his observant faculties. We know from his notebooks the kind of mental gymnastics he put himself through. The sense training offered by the delightful sensory gymnastics in this chapter will guide you toward heightened sensory awareness, acuity, and enjoyment. But first, reflect on these self-assessment checklists. Sensazione, self-assessment, vision. I am sensitive to color harmonies and clashes. I know the color of all my friends' eyes. I look out into the far horizon and up to the sky at least once a day. I am good at describing a scene in detail. I like doodling and drawing. Friends would describe me as alert. I am sensitive to subtle changes in lighting. I can picture things clearly in my mind's eye. You can witness an ironic testament to Leonardo's lament when you next visit the Louvre. As you approach the Mona Lisa, you will see a number of signs, written in large letters and different languages, reading, "No flash photography, please." As you attempt to take in the subtleties of this most mysterious of all paintings, you'll find yourself almost blinded by the stroboscopic effect of the non-stop camera flashes of the Philistines who never bother to stop and actually look at the painting. Sensazione, self-assessment, hearing. Friends describe me as a good listener. I am sensitive to noise. I can tell when someone is singing off-key. I can sing on-key. I listen to jazz or classical music regularly. I can distinguish the melody from the bass line in a piece of music. I know what all the controls on my stereo system are for and can hear the difference when I adjust them. I enjoy silence. I am attuned to subtle changes in a speaker's voice tone, volume, and inflection. Sensazione, self-assessment, smell. I have a favorite scent. Smells affect my emotions strongly, for better or worse. I can recognize friends by their scent. I know how to use aromas to influence my mood. I can reliably judge the quality of food or wine by its aroma. When I see fresh flowers, I usually take a few moments to breathe in their aroma. Sensazione, self-assessment, taste. I can taste the freshness of fresh foods. I enjoy many different types of cuisine. I seek out unusual taste experiences. I can discern the flavor contributions of different herbs and spices in a complex dish. I am a good cook. I appreciate the pairing of food and wine. I eat consciously, aware of the taste of my food. I avoid junk food. I avoid eating on the run. I enjoy participating in taste tests and wine tastings. Sensazione, self-assessment, touch. I am aware of the feel of the surfaces that surround me daily, e.g., the chairs, sofas, and car seats I sit on. I am sensitive to the quality of fabric that I wear. I like to touch and be touched. Friends say I give great hugs. I know how to listen with my hands. When I touch someone, I can tell if he or she is tense or relaxed. Sensazione, self-assessment, synesthesia. I enjoy describing one sense in terms of another. I intuitively understand which colors are cold and which are hot. My response to art is visceral. I am aware of the role of synesthesia in the thinking of great artists and scientists. I can sense which of these sounds, ooh-la, zip-zip-zip, nee-nee-nee-nee, are reflected in the following shapes, a tilde, 3 carats, and 5 V's. Sensazione, application and exercises. Vision, looking and seeing. Leonardo wrote that the eye encompasses the beauty of the whole world. You can begin to cultivate keener vision and appreciate more fully the beauty that the world has to offer with the following practices. The eye palming exercise. Sit at a desk in a quiet, private place. Keep your feet squarely on the floor and sit so that you are supported by the bones at the bottom of your pelvis. If you wear glasses, take them off. Contact lenses are okay. Now, rub your palms together vigorously for about 20 seconds. Resting your elbows lightly on the desk, cup your palms, and place them over your gently closed eyes. Be sure not to touch the eyeball or put pressure on the sides of your nose. Breathe deeply in an easy, relaxed fashion, and rest with your eyes closed for 3 to 5 minutes. When you are ready to finish, take your palms away from your eyes, but leave your eyes closed for another 20 seconds or so. Do not rub your eyes. Then gently open your eyes and look around. You will probably notice that colors seem brighter and that everything seems sharper and more defined. Do this once or twice a day. Focus near and far. This is a very simple and valuable exercise that you can practice many times each day. Look at something close to you, such as this book or your hand. Then change your focus to the farthest horizon. Pick out a specific element of the far horizon and focus on it for a few seconds, then come back to your hand. Then look out again to the farthest horizon, focusing on a different element this time. In addition to enlivening your eyes and expanding your perception, this exercise can improve your driving and specifically prevent you from speeding unknowingly past state troopers on the freeway. Soft eyes. Sitting in front of a computer screen and reading reports drives many people toward a habitually hard, narrow focus. Instead, allow a few deep exhalations and try the following exercise. Place your index fingers together at eye level, about 12 inches from your face. Looking straight ahead, move your fingers slowly away from each other on the horizontal plane. Stop moving your fingers when you can no longer see them with your peripheral vision. Bring your fingers back to center and do the same exercise with the vertical plane. Exhale. Now soften your eyes by relaxing the muscles of your forehead, face, and jaw, and allow a receptivity to the broadest possible expanse of vision. Note the way this exercise affects your mind and body. Describe a sunrise or sunset. Look in the newspaper to learn the exact time of the sunrise or sunset. Find a quiet place to sit where you can get a good view. Arrange to arrive at least 10 minutes before the official time. Quiet your mind and body with a few deep, full breaths, focusing on extended exhalations. Do the palming exercise for 3 minutes, then focus near and far, accessing soft eyes as you take in the horizon. Describe the details of the experience in your notebook. This is Leonardo's description of a sunrise. At the first hour of the day, the atmosphere in the south, near to the horizon, has a dim haze of rose-flushed clouds. Toward the west, it grows darker, and toward the east, the damp vapor of the horizon shows brighter than the actual horizon itself, and the white of the houses in the east is scarcely to be discerned. While in the south, the farther distant they are, the more they assume a dark rose-flushed hue, and even more so in the west. And with the shadows, it is the contrary, for these disappear before the white houses. Study the lives and work of your favorite artists. Make a list of your 10 favorite painters. Then devote a set period of time, a week, 3 months, a year, to immersing yourself in the study of their life and work. Read everything you can. Visit their works. Hang reproductions of your favorite paintings in your bathroom, office, and kitchen. Here's my top 10 list of painters of the Western world. 1. Leonardo. Surprise. 2. Paul Cézanne. 3. Vincent van Gogh. 4. Rembrandt van Rijn. 5. Michelangelo. 6. Jan Vermeer. 7. Giorgione. 8. Masaccio. 9. Salvador Dali. 10. Mary Cassatt. Leonardo observed that the idea or the faculty of imagination serves as both rudder and bridle to the senses, inasmuch as the thing imagined moves the sense. Make the most of museums. How can you deepen your appreciation of great art and enhance your capacity for saper vedere, knowing how to see? One simple key is to have a strategy for museum visits. Many very well-educated people find themselves overwhelmed by visits to art museums. There is so much to see. Without a positive strategy for viewing and enjoying an exhibition, one can often come away exhausted and unfulfilled. Audio and docent tours can be excellent, but they vary dramatically in quality. Try the following. Go to a museum with a friend. Decide in advance which sections of the collection you wish to view. As you enter each room, split up, agreeing to meet at a set time. Suspend judgments based on all the analytical terms you may have learned in your college art history course. Just look at each painting or sculpture with fresh, innocent eyes. Avoid looking at the name of the artist or the title of the painting until after you have taken the time to appreciate it deeply. What appeals to you about a particular work of art? Make notes in your journal on the paintings or sculptures that affect you most profoundly. Then meet with your friend and share your impressions of the most outstanding work in that room. Your focus on articulating what draws you to a particular work will hone your appreciation and enjoyment. And, of course, you get the benefit of your friend's perspective, which can deepen your appreciation, not only of particular paintings, but also of your friend. When I do this exercise with my friends, they invariably say something like, "That was the most fun I've ever had in a museum." Practice subtle speculation, the art of visualization. Visualization is a marvelous tool to sharpen all your senses, improve your memory, and prepare for accomplishing your goals in life. Visualization was an essential element of Leonardo's strategy for learning and creating. As he wrote, "I have found in my own experience that it is of no small benefit when you lie in bed in the dark to go over again in the imagination the outlines of the forms you have been studying or of other noteworthy things conceived by subtle speculation. And this is certainly a praiseworthy exercise and useful in impressing things on the memory." Although intended as advice for painters, it applies equally well to artists of life. You can practice conscious visualization to improve everything, from your golf game and ballroom dancing to your drawing and presentation skills. Visualization seems to be most effective when you are relaxed, so good times to practice include in the morning upon waking, at night as you fade off to sleep, when you are a passenger in a train, plane, boat, or auto, when taking a break from work, after meditation, yoga, or exercise, or any time when your body is relaxed and your mind is free. The ability to visualize a desired outcome is built into your brain, and your brain is designed to help you succeed in matching that picture with your performance. And the more thoroughly you involve all your senses, the more compelling your visualization becomes. To get the most from your visualization practice, keep your visualization positive. Many people practice unconscious negative visualization, more commonly known as worry. Although the ability to picture what might go wrong is essential to intelligent planning, be careful to avoid fixating on images of failure, disaster, and catastrophe. Instead, visualize your positive response to any challenge. Distinguish between fantasy and visualization. Fantasy can be fun, and the free flow of imagery it inspires can be useful in generating creative ideas, but visualization is different from fantasy. When visualizing, you consciously focus your mind on imagining a desired process and outcome. In other words, you practice disciplined mental rehearsal. And it is your consistency and intensity of focus, rather than the technicolor clarity of your visualization, that is most important in making it effective. Make your visualization multisensory. Use all your senses to make your visualization unforgettable and irresistible. Whether you are preparing for a presentation, planning a meal, or training for athletic competition, imagine the sights, sounds, feel, smell, and taste of success. Do not imagine the Mona Lisa with a mustache. If you failed to carry out this instruction, it is because your power of visualization is so strong that it takes any suggestion, positive or negative, and turns it into an image. And as the maestro emphasized, the thing imagined moves the sense. Many people, however, are burdened by the mistaken assumption that they can't visualize. What they usually mean is that they do not see clear, technicolor, internal visual images. It is important to realize that you can get the full benefits of visualization practice without seeing clear technicolor images. If you think you cannot visualize, try answering the following questions. What is the model and color of your car? Can you describe your mother's face? What are the markings on a Dalmatian dog? Chances are you answered these questions easily by drawing on your internal image databank, the occipital lobe of your cerebral cortex. This databank has the potential, in coordination with your frontal lobes, to store and create more images, both real and imaginary, than all the world's film and television production companies combined. Da Vinci noted two types of visualization: post-imagining, the imagining of things that are past; pre-imagining, the imagining of things that are to be. Try the following exercises to enhance the vividness of your multisensory visualization. Picture your favorite scene. Enjoy some deep, full breaths and then close your eyes. Create a picture of your favorite place, real or imaginary. Perhaps, for example, you choose a beach. In your mind's eye, look out at the vast expanse of the blue-green ocean, following the forward rush of foamy white wave crests. Listen to the rumbling rhythm of the surf and feel the warm rays of the sun on your back. Breathe in the invigorating smell of the salty air carried by the soft sea breeze and savor the texture of wet sand between your toes. Spy a squadron of 6 brown pelicans skimming just above the water, suddenly dispersing in all directions. The largest pelican returns and dives straight down to swallow a silver-tailed fish. Grasp a handful of sand, hold it up to the clear blue sky, let it fall through your fingers, light dancing off the crystals. Wash your hands in the undertow. Lick your fingers, tasting the salty sea. Continue enjoying your visit to your favorite place, relishing every delightful sensory detail. Create your own internal masterpiece theater. One of the best ways to cultivate the art of visualization is through the visualization of art. Choose any one of the masterpieces of your favorite artist, for example, Leonardo's The Last Supper or Van Gogh's Sunflowers. Hang a reproduction on your wall and study it for at least 5 minutes each day for a week. Then as you drift off to sleep each night, aim to recreate the painting in your mind's eye. Visualize the details. Bring all your senses to this exercise. Imagine the sounds around the table in The Last Supper or the smell of the sunflowers. Record the changes in your impressions of the work from day to day. Learn to draw. The ultimate Da Vincian approach to visual refinement would be to learn to paint. But like that of most artists, Da Vinci's painting is predicated on his drawing. Leonardo emphasized that drawing was the foundation of painting and of learning how to see. He wrote, "Drawing is as indispensable to the architect and the sculptor as it is to the potter, the goldsmith, the weaver, or the embroiderer. It has given arithmeticians their figures. It has taught geometers the shape of their diagrams. It has instructed opticians, astronomers, machine builders, and engineers." For Leonardo, drawing was much more than illustration. It was the key to understanding creation. So for aspiring Da Vincians, learning to draw is the best way to begin to learn to see and create. To help you get started, you will find the Beginner's Da Vinci Drawing Course later on in the book. Listening and hearing. Every sound and every silence provides an opportunity to deepen auditory perspicacity. But city sounds can be overwhelming and cause us to dull our sensitivity. Surrounded by jackhammers, televisions, and airplane, subway, and automobile noises, most of us tune out for self-protection. Try the following exercises to tune up your auditory sense. Layered listening. Once or twice each day, pause for a few moments, Enjoy a few full, deep exhalations and listen to the sounds around you. First, you'll hear the loudest, most obvious sounds, the air conditioner, the clock ticking, the traffic outside, the background noises of people and